B-Pod Studios.
Mike Missinelli, 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station.
We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli show. Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like the sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly with Hades the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like the opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock.
Good afternoon, everybody. Mike Missinelli Show. On a Tuesday, and a lot of news being made on a Tuesday. We broadcast from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Is everybody happy now? Yesterday, when Andrew Souchunas was the producer, we're going back and forth about how this was disrupting everybody's life. And what's disrupting Tyrone's life. Tyrone, before the show, swore that he was now going to use his money that he would have paid for Phillies tickets for vacation. That he was tired of the whole thing. Well, now it's busted wide open. Because one of the guys has signed, and there is the measuring stick. Machado gets $300 million for 10 years. $30 million a year. That's what we thought that they were bargaining for. I said a long time ago. How many weeks did I say it, Tyrone? I don't know. 5 weeks ago?
Might have been long. I think it's probably about seven weeks ago.
I said the Phillies are in a position where they're going to have to pay $350 million for 10 years and end it. Well, they weren't willing to do that because they're playing this game. They want to negotiate against themselves. So now the standard has been set, $300 million for 10 years, which is the exact same offer that the Washington Nationals offered Bryce Harper that he turned down. Now, what does this do? Does this favor the Phillies? Because the word is out, at least from the hundreds of baseball experts who have put their two cents in on this whole thing, that he doesn't like Philadelphia. And that's what the holdup is, that he doesn't want to play in Philadelphia. Well, there's a way to get around that. And the way to get around that is to do what? Pay extra. So he likes Philadelphia. Guy said from the start, maybe it wasn't his first choice. You know how you make it your first choice? You go to $350 million for 10 years, $35 million a year. He's the highest paid player in baseball. Scott Boras can wear that as like a nice little badge of honor and walk around California with it and knows he's got the guy that was worth the most money. All right? It's really come down to that simple, hasn't it? If the Phillies lose him now, what? Is he going to turn down $350? Is he going to turn down $325? It would be silly to do that, right? But herein lies the peril. Because of this dance that was going on, because the Phillies were dancing, maybe they were trying to get him at the best deal possible, maybe they didn't want to bid against themselves, maybe they didn't know the number that was out there, does it invite other people to come in? Does it invite the Washington Nationals? That's already put $300 mil on the board for the guy to go up to 325. And he wants to play in Washington. And he goes to 325. All they do is put 25 more million in there. Are they in danger of losing him to the Nationals now? To the Yankees now that the price has been set. Say, well, you know, he wants to be a Yankee. What the hell? We don't mind paying the luxury tax. We might as well give him $325 million if he wants to be a Yankee. We'll make him happy. Where does this put the Phillies? Does it give them an advantage or does it give them a disadvantage? One topic we can't talk about anymore is how baseball is holding up the fans. God forbid. They were holding up the fans, Tyrone. They were making them wait. They were holding them hostage all this time. And now here comes the fruition. It's the Phillies chess move. How you feeling about it?
I don't feel good about it.
You don't feel good about it?
No, I should feel great.
Uh-huh.
Because using conventional wisdom, the team with the most money right now, in theory, is the Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
And the Phillies can call them up and say, all right, 300 is the baseline. I'll offer you 325. And they say 325 is not enough. And you say, okay, 340. And then you get the 350 mm-hmm. and it should get done. The problem is, you've been playing games with the guy.
I've been playing games with them, too.
Well, fine.
Frankly.
They've been fine. You've been playing games. But he holds all the chips.
Yes, he does.
They need him more than he needs them.
Yes, he does.
Once you get to $300 million, what if he says, I like Washington's 320 more than your 330? Mm-hmm. Had you just did, what, 350 in the beginning, you probably could have got this done sooner. But since they didn't, they don't have a track record of success at all. This whole group, they do not. This group has no track record of success until they get the deal done. I don't feel good about it.
They played smarty pants this whole time, thinking that eventually these players weren't going to get their 10 years and were going to come folding back, and the Phillies would get them at a 7-year deal and they wouldn't have to pay as much money. And so, God forbid, you bid against yourself. And now they're in danger of losing the man. Because reports are that the Philadelphia thing is what's holding them up. Now, I know how the macho Philadelphia fan is thinking about this. Well, screw it! He doesn't want our city, we don't want him! And that would be foolhardy. Because that really is cutting off your nose to spite your face. You may be offended by the fact that he doesn't like your fair city. The bottom line is, you need him to like your fair city. And the only way that he likes your fair city is for $50 extra million, which I said at the start. About Meg Kladtak, I don't have a problem spending $350 million of John Middleton's money. Why would I? If I'm going to get the guy, he wants to spend stupid money, I'd throw $350 out there right away. I don't know. What's all the shenanigans? If you really wanted a player and you really want to contend, you got to pay that kind of money to contend. It's really simple. And don't give me the BS that you still had a successful offseason if you don't get this guy. Because you don't have a successful offseason if you don't get this guy. A successful offseason is determined by whether you've done enough to consider yourself a possible winner. And the Phillies are short of that right now. With Harper, they outslug people. Just like they did, and I heard Anthony say the same thing in 2008. Their pitching staff was kind of feeble. They outslugged people. That's the kind of team this has to be, with the bullpen, good bullpen, and a team that can score runs 5-6 a game. That's how they win. The only way they do that is with Bryce Harper. So how do you feel, Philly fans? Are you on the macho side of it where, oh, he doesn't want my city, I don't want him, screw him? Or do you say, hey, Phillies, you should have been offering him $350 million in the first place because you know that would have got it done. What side of the fence are you on? We'll talk about it. Here's how you get in. 610-632-0975. It is the topic of the day for Philly fans. The other topic that I wanted to throw in today is an offbeat topic. I want to, you know, last week. We were talking about movies. And I looked at this IMDb's list, top list of 100 movies. And I made a comment at the time that there were only like 10 that were from 1990 on. The rest of them were old-time movies, like the old classics. So I started to think to myself, if I were to ask this modern-day audience that listens to our program, what would be their top 10 movies? What movies would come out in the top 10, Tyrone? What would be the number one movie for people? If you're counting 1990 on, what would be the number one movie on everybody's list? The Godfather's out now. Right? I take The Godfather out. My top five of all time were classics. Like my top five was The Godfather, The Sting, Good, the Bad, the Ugly, Pulp Fiction, and Deer Hunter. They were kind of old school movies except for Pulp Fiction. So by that theory, my number one movie would then have to be Pulp Fiction. If we're counting from the 90s on. So which one is your top movie, Tyrone?
For me, Pulp Fiction would be one, I agree.
That would be number one.
Yes.
Okay.
Two, for me, is Goodfellas.
Goodfellas would be two?
It'd be two for me.
Really? See, I wouldn't have that at two.
Yeah, I would.
And that would surprise a lot of people.
Right. Three would be Braveheart.
Uh-huh.
Four would be Shawshank.
Uh-huh.
Five would be Casino. I like that movie way more than other people do. I love Casino.
Casino is a pretty good candidate.
Yeah, and that would be my five off the top of my head.
All right, but that's a pretty good one. I would have in my top five, Pulp Fiction, one, Shawshank, two, Braveheart, three, The Departed, four, and The Usual Suspects, five.
It's not bad. Those are all top. To me, The Departed, it didn't hit me. I don't know why.
Really?
It didn't hit me the way these.
No, I liked The Departed a lot.
It was great.
Now, Goodfellas would be in my bottom 10, along with like Gladiator, Casino, Gump. I had to put my top 10.
Oh, look at that.
There you go. It's a classic.
Oh, look
Gump.
At that.
And I loved Inglourious Basterds.
Super underrated.
Yeah, it's a very underrated movie. So I'll put that in my top 10 as well. So we'll just kick that around today as we're discussing the Bryce Hart. Now, Manny Machado's gone. All right? I got what I wanted. Only one guy left. Now you got to sign the right fielder. To me, it makes more sense for the Phillies to have a left-handed slugger in their lineup now who can hit 45 home runs in right field where you wouldn't have to put up with a platoon of Nick Williams and Aaron Altair. And you still have Franco there, knucklehead that he is, still give you 20 home runs at 65 home runs out of those two positions. You got Machado with third, you only get 35 home runs, and you probably get 20 at max in right field. So this is the guy you have to target. What should the Phillies do right now? What would you do? 610-632-0975. It's the Mike Missinelli Show. We're back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
All right, let's talk to the man who knows baseball, can straighten this whole thing out more than anybody. He, of course, is a Hall of Famer. J.G. Spink Award winner, writer for The Athletic. He's on TV. He tweets. He's all over the place. His name is Jason Stark. He joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. All right, Jason, one stands. Do they get him?
Do they get Bryce?
Do they get him? What are the odds now?
All right, well, I've thought for some time now, at least a week, that when the smoke cleared, Manny Machado would wind up in San Diego and Bryce Harper would wind up in Philadelphia. But you've got some, you still got a weird dynamic in place, man, because who are the Phillies bidding against here? That's a question that I don't know if even they can answer. When we saw those reports that surfaced over the weekend that the Phillies were in the lead, it was going to be $300 million plus, talks were intensifying. You know what that said to me? Scott Boras wanted that out there so that whoever else was still alive, whether it was the Nationals or some mystery team, would step up. I don't think it necessarily meant the Phillies were about to finish off the deal. Haven't sensed that.
You get the impression, there's these reports out there that what's holding it up is that he's not that sweet on playing in Philadelphia. Are you hearing that?
Yeah.
You are hearing that.
I've been hearing that for a while. Mm-hmm. I think it's been apparent, right? Well, let's think about this. We're over 3 months into free agency, 3.5 months. He's clearly been waiting around for something. Scott Boras has clearly been waiting around for something. Is it just money? I don't think it is. I think his preference is to be somewhere else. I think his preference is still to go back to Washington. I think that's totally in the owner's hands. And I think this one is in the owner's hands in Philadelphia. Like, I think there's a certain price point where he has to say yes. But the Phillies had been under the impression they didn't have to get to that price point. Mm-hmm. My big question is, does this deal change that? I really don't think many people thought that Manny Machado was going to get 10 years, $300 million from anybody.
Yeah, much less San Diego. I have no idea what they're thinking out there, but that's their problem. So let's look at it this way, because I agree with you 100% that this brings the Nationals back in. They already offered him $300 million. I know they spent a lot of millions on other players. But if they are close, what's them to stop them from going, okay, let's make him happy. We'll go $325. He beats Machado's contract. He wants to come back here. No sweat off our nose. Let's do that.
You make it sound so simple, right?
I do.
They offered what they offered at the beginning of the offseason and made it clear, Bryce, if you say no, we are building our team without you. And that is what they have gone right out and done that. If they were now to add a $35 million a year player or whatever, I mean, that puts them into the luxury tax purgatory. Unlike anything we've ever seen, they'd be in the 90% luxury tax bracket for eternity, for as long as he's there, just about. And that means a $35 million a year commitment becomes like almost a $70 million a year commitment. It's not that simple. But it's been interesting to talk to the Nationals people through the winter, because they went from we're out, he's going somewhere else, to, you know what, it might be 50-50, to we're out, to, you know what, this is in the owner's hands. Ask him. When Ted Lerner hadn't surfaced, we can't ask him, but this is totally his call. I don't think, my gut tells me he's not doing what you just described, but does he really want to see this player go to a team in his division and have to play it 18 times a year?
Okay, here's the other side of it, though, and I understand the luxury tax hell. That luxury tax hell also may guarantee them a couple of world championships in the next 3 years. With that pitching staff and with him back in the lineup, who beats the Washington Nationals?
I'm not sure anybody beats him anyway, but I've been saying that for like 5 years, and they never win a series.
Would you pay the luxury tax in order to buy two World Series?
I mean, look, me personally, I've talked to their people about this since last September. I think they're positioned to win with or without him. Juan Soto was one of the best-looking young offensive players I've ever seen in my life last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Victor Robles is one of the best prospects in baseball. He arrived this year. They've got a combination of Adam Eaton and Michael Taylor, and they're good. They can play. This puts them way beyond any budget that you would ever expect that team to have. He would have to be reaching into his personal fortune. He's over 90 years old, Mike. Maybe he does that, right? But like from a baseball standpoint, from a budget standpoint, he doesn't have to, and they don't have to.
I don't know. If I'm buying the Rolls Royce, I spend the extra money for the supersonic sound system. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, let's get back to the Phillies here. Now, I've thought all along that the Phillies would have to cement this deal by going overboard. I said from the jump, they had to pay $350 for 10 years from the jump. And they didn't want to negotiate against themselves. I understand that whole thing. But they are almost in a position to have to do that now, aren't they?
Like that's the aspect of this that is really crazy, because all right, let's just say they really are negotiating against themselves. Scott Boras does not see it that way. He thinks they're negotiating A, against Manny Machado, B, against Giancarlo Stanton, and three, against Zach Greinke, because he's got the highest average annual value ever. So he's got to make history, or he's not allowing his player to sign. So that means $35 million a year minimum. It means 10 years minimum in Scott's mind, and he's determined he's going to get it. He's telling the world as we speak, I'm getting more than that guy just got.
How did the Phillies
you're not wrong.
How did the Phillies not realize that? I realized it. You did.
I don't know if that's the exact terminology. they've been playing this because they felt like they had the leverage here. They had the money. They had both players kind of scrambling for it, needed them, and it was really hard to foresee a scenario where multiple teams outbid them for both players. And you know, I think my impression in the last week or two is that they really didn't see another team that was seriously in this on Bryce. They really didn't think that Manny Machado was going to get 10 years or $300 million or $30 million a year. Didn't think that was happening. And this is a development that is going to cause them to rethink those assumptions. And look, this is now in John Middleton's hands. I think it probably always has been. He's been incredibly disciplined. He's been incredibly determined not to get played for a fool by Scott Boras. A lot of owners have been wined and dined and romanced by Scott and done stuff they regretted. He was determined not to be that guy. But Mike, this is on him.
Well, they have been playing a dangerous game all along. It's akin to Russian roulette. I got to ask you two more questions. The first one is, right now, what do you think the percentage chance is the Phillies get him?
Look, nobody really knows this answer. I'm just guessing. I told you at the beginning, I thought he was going to wind up as a Philly. Mm-hmm. I still think it's 75%. Because I don't know who else.
All right, well, that's
stupid money.
That's encouraging to the people here in 75.
Yeah, I think when the dust settles, he winds up in Philadelphia. But as I've been saying, it's clearly not his dream come true, and he's waiting around for something different to happen.
All right, if they don't get him, what are they? If they get him, what are they?
They've got to get him, for me, to be a playoff team. Look, they're a lot better, right? Mm-hmm. JT Realmuto is probably three wins better than whatever they were going to do at catcher. Reese Hoskins back to first base makes them 2 to 3 wins better. Gene Segura at short, compared to what they were getting last year, is 2 wins, 3 wins better. Andrew McCutchen is 2 wins better than what they had in the 8 outfield corners last year. And Bryce Harper is at least 3 or 4 more wins. I'm still concerned about their pitching repeating what they did last year, right? That after August 5th, they went 11-30 in games not started by Aaron Nola.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But if they get Bryce Harper, let's do the math, right? It's 3 wins, 2 wins, 2 wins, mm-hmm. 2 wins, 4 wins. That's like a 12 or 13 game improvement. That makes you a 90-plus win team. That's a playoff team.
Yes, it is. All right. We'll sit here and wait. And if there's any particular text comes your way, make sure you slide it over to us, pal. All right?
You got it, Mike.
All right, Jason. Thank you. Jason Stark on the Comcast Business Hotline. He says 75% chance. I'm not so sure about that. This dangerous game of Russian roulette may have backfired on them. Today they have to decide whether they're going to franchise. The earliest they can decide whether to franchise Mr. Nick Foles and then try to make a move for him. Tim McManus, covering the Eagles for ESPN.com, is on the Comcast Business Hotline. Tim, what are you feeling right now? What are you hearing?
What's going on, Mike? Yeah, so today is the first day that the Eagles or anybody in the NFL can designate one of their players with the franchise tag, and that goes until the 5th. So February 19th to March 5th is the window. And I think that the Eagles are going to use a lot of that time, that allotted time, to figure out whether or not they can line up a trade for Foles. And the answer to that will dictate whether or not the franchise tag gets placed on him, because they are in no position to just franchise tag him and then see what happens. I mean, that's a $25 million gamble that they will not be able to make. And so they're going to use this time, and certainly the combine coming up will be a great kind of spot for that, to see if they have a trade partner that they can kind of making a deal.
Yeah, they're probably talking behind the scenes. So do you believe that they're having trouble right now orchestrating a trade so far?
I don't know if I would call it trouble, but I think it would be, at least my read on it is that they don't have a trade partner in place yet. And I think that if you look around, the kind of the marketplace, who are the teams that would be willing to pony up in a deal for Foles? And just trying to take the temperature of the league, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of landing spots for him, and it would only shrink more you know, if you put the tag and trade designation as part of it. You know, Jacksonville Jaguars, I think, are going to end up having interest. Whether they are willing to make a deal, I think, depends on just how scared they are, essentially, of losing him to another team. You know, so a lot of this, I think, is going to be about Howie Roseman and whether creating a market or creating an impression. You know, if you don't make a deal for him, you could lose him. And I think that might be a lot of the cat and mouse game here. But if you look around, I mean, who are the other teams?
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you. Who else do you think could be involved? And there could be, could there be division teams involved?
Well, that's, I mean, that's the one thing that you could play, but I don't see it. You know, the Giants seem to be committed to Eli Manning for another year, and using him plus maybe a draft pick to figure out their quarterback situation. Washington had just given big money to Alex Smith, and even though he's not going to be available, you know, the read there is it doesn't seem all that likely that they would kind of reinvest big numbers in another quarterback. So that would take them off the table. And as we know, you know, Denver just made a trade for Joe Flacco, and that takes another potential landing spot away from them. So, you know, outside of Jacksonville, honestly, there's no, like, single team that you can point to and say they would definitely take Foles. I mean, it seems like the Jags are the sure one, and then it gets a lot fuzzier from there.
All right, let me ask you the value part of this, because Flacco's value is a fourth rounder. I would assume that that's would be Foles' value also, but even maybe even less, because every team knows that the Eagles have to trade him. What do you think is his value right now?
Yeah, I think a mid-round pick sounds about right, like a third or fourth rounder for Foles, if it ends up coming down to that. And as you say, you can kind of use Flacco's deal as a market setter, and you can make the case, I think, if you're the Eagles, that Foles presents a little bit more value. But as you say, on the other side, you know, things have slimmed down, so there's just not a whole lot of leverage that the Eagles can hold over another team. And that's especially true because everybody in the world knows that they can't hold on to him for $25 million, which really complicates this whole thing. And then there's a whole other factor of, is it even, like, legal within the NFL realm to tag him, considering that everybody knows that he's not going to stay? And there's some language in the CBA that suggests it might not be kind of within their power to do that. So, in other words, there's a bunch of different obstacles that are in front of the Eagles. They have to find the trade partner. Really, the Foles camp has to be willing sort of on the back end to go along with it. And then there's the whole deal with the collective bargaining agreement as to whether it's a fair game or not. You know, so the stars really need to align for Philly to pull this off.
All right, clear this up for me. If his value is only a fourth rounder, then wouldn't it behoove the Eagles to just not franchise tag him, let him go, get the compensatory pick, which has been reported would be a third rounder?
I think that would be the max that you would get. And, you know, that whole compensatory pick formula is dependent on how many guys are going out the door and how many you bring in. It's not really a slam dunk, and the comp pick would be in 2020 as opposed to getting it in hand in 2019. I think that there's some value to that. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, if you're getting a third rounder in 2020 versus a fourth rounder or below in 2019, then yes, I think it would make some sense to kind of save the headache of all of this and go that route. And that ultimately might be the way that this thing plays out. I mean, I think that, you know, really it comes down to whether Roseman can, you know, kind of work some magic over the course of the next 2 weeks. Otherwise, they're going to have to let him roll, but they should get a nice compensatory pick back. So I would say, you know, if they can end up getting a third rounder for him now, certainly they would pull the trigger. But, you know, there's a lot of things that have to happen for that to take place.
What's your best guess as to what happens here?
Well, I have a lot of faith in Roseman's ability, obviously, in his position. But I do think that there are some roadblocks here. So I kind of have been going back and forth on this. But because of all those roadblocks, I'm just not sure that they're going to be able to pull it off.
All right. They wouldn't, like, because a lot of people ask this question. Well, I don't want to see him go into division. If the Giants do shift gears and say they want him and they move Eli somewhere, would the Eagles be afraid to trade him to the Giants? Because I look at it like the opposite way. I mean, why would they be afraid of Nick playing against Nick Foles?
You know, I mean, there's a couple different ways to look at it. I see where you're coming from. I would say that one thing that they might want to avoid is kind of the narrative that goes along that and the comparisons that you would have to deal with in division for the next however many years. You know, there was already so much made of Carson Wentz versus Nick Foles already. And then if you put him in a division and have the team stacked side by side and the comparisons ongoing, that doesn't seem particularly ideal. And then, of course, there's the other chance that Foles ends up being really successful. And there is something to be said for the way that his career is starting to turn a little bit. I mean, he's had the ups and downs, but it does seem like he's gotten comfortable in the league and has figured out what works really well for him. And if he can kind of translate the success that he's seen in short doses over the last 2 years into kind of a bigger picture, you know, that can be, you know, that can really help a franchise. So yeah, I think ideally they want to get him out of the division. I don't think there's any question about that. Their preference, get him in the AFC if they can. That's part of the attraction of trading him and why they're holding out hope that maybe they can make a deal.
Okay. I'm looking at a mock draft fresh off the press. It is Mel Kiper's mock draft 2.0. Mm-hmm. And his 2.0 draft has the Eagles taking Trayvon Mullen, a cornerback from Clemson. Now, from what we've heard, it's, you know, it's very strong a defensive line that they would go there. Would they take a cornerback?
Yeah, I'm having trouble picturing them taking a cornerback in the first round. And people have varying opinions on just how good the young CBs are on the Eagles roster. But I know that there are people in house that are still bullish on Sidney Jones, even though he hasn't proven it on the big stage as of yet. And, you know, Craven LeBlanc as a slot corner turned out pretty well last year. And you also have guys like Jalen Mills, and you have Avante Maddox, who really impressed. Rasul Douglas. I mean, so there's enough there where I don't know that it would be the most appealing thing to take a CB in the first round. Plus, you know, I think that Howie Roseman has already stated that he views this defensive line group as historic. And pass rushers usually go early. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it makes more sense to me that they would go along like the defensive front before they would go corner.
Last question. Would they have any interest in Big Chest?
Antonio Brown,
now known as Big Chest.
Yeah. Certainly just kind of on the surface. And I've seen people say, well, what if they trade Antonio Brown for Nelson Aguilar so the money kind of matches up and all those things? You would have to kind of investigate just what sort of headaches Antonio Brown caused, why they're moving on from him, and those types of deals. And then you also have to figure in the cap. So, you know, the Eagles are going to have to make some maneuvering. They're going to have to maneuver a little bit here. I just looked at the roster management numbers on ESPN, and the Eagles are currently, you know, 32nd out of 32 in cap space. They're at plus $22 million right now.
Yep.
That'll change a lot once Nick Foles comes off the books, and they, you know, Tim Jernigan, I think they can get him off the books. That'll clear like another $10 million. So they'll find a way to kind of whittle themselves down. But if Antonio Brown is looking for like fully guaranteed money, and wants to redo the deal, I think that would be prohibitive for the Eagles. So I'm sure interest on the surface, sure, but whether they can actually make it happen, probably another deal altogether.
All right. So I had a hello to Mac Hollins. Timmy, thank you, buddy. Good information. We'll talk to you.
All right, Mike.
Here is Tim McManus, Comcast Business Hotline, giving us the information on the Nick Foles situation. But, you know, if the Eagles did sign Antonio Brown, you know what they would say. What? Their two words. They did their...
due diligence.
Due diligence!
They did their due diligence.
Yes!
It's fine.
Yes!
It was a certain, you know, the
right
course there. He's
okay.
A winner.
Yes.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.